In the purport of the verse we discussed this morning, text 42, there's a sentence that says, this Karna Daksha Vishnu causes the manifestation of material creation by his looking over material energy, sa aikshata. In the first volume of this book, we have already discussed to some extent the explanation of the verse, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam. The duration of the illusory play of material creation is called a kalpa. And we have already discussed the creation is taking place in kalpa after kalpa. So since you all study first canto Srimad Bhagavatam so carefully and repeatedly, can somebody recall what Jagrahe Purusham Rupam refers to? And then speak a little bit about it. And if you can't remember what it refers to, I can refresh your memory and then you can speak something about it. One, three, one. Canto 1, Chapter 3, text number 1. Jagrahe Purusham Rupam. What's Chapter 3 of the first canto about? Incarnations of the Lord. Yeah. It's the fifth question that was asked, and any answer to that fifth question. Please describe the incarnations of the Lord as they appear in this world. Okay, so that's what chapter 3 is about. And then the lead verse of the chapter begins this Jagrahe hint, Purusham Rupam. So what's that verse about? Huh? Yes. I was thinking that you would say the Purusha avatars, but it's about the universal form. Let us get the first canto. Look at that, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam. Bhagavan Mahad Adibihi Sambhutam Sodasha Kalam Adau Loka Sushrikshaya. Suta Goswami said, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus, at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Okay, so who would like to describe the difference between the Purusha avatars and the universal form? Universal form is what?
It's imaginary.
Imaginary.
Yes,
and the Purusha avatars are which?
Expansions of the Lord. Expansions of Krishna.
Expansions of Krishna. Does everybody agree with that statement or would like to disagree with that statement? You weren't expecting a quiz this evening, were you? It tends to make the audience more attentive. We'll take a poll. How many would agree with that statement, and then how many would disagree with that statement? First choice. How many would agree with that statement? How many would disagree with that statement? Pretty evenly split. How many are abstaining? Okay. Of those of you that agree with the statement, would you like to modify the statement in any way so that you would be more comfortable to agree with that statement? No. Yes?
The universal form is meant for neophytes, like the Lord has veils everywhere in his eyes, the sun.
Universal form is meant for neophytes. Okay? So, but that doesn't address the specific statement was universal form is imaginary. Whereas the Purusha avatars are factual expansions of the Lord. Now you're adding another component. Let's do it the other way around. Those of you that said you don't exactly agree with that statement, please make a statement that you can support that's different than that statement. Go ahead.
The universal form is not imaginary.
It's not imaginary. Okay, those are...
Arjuna saw it.
Huh?
Arjuna saw it.
Arjuna saw it, so it's not imaginary. Unless he was imagining something. Okay, it's not imaginary. What is it? How is the question is, how is the universal form distinct from the Purusha avatars? That's the question. You want to supply an answer? You want to keep us in suspense and go on? Someone else would like to supply an answer. Yes?
Universal form is made of material elements.
Okay. Okay, so I'll say it back. The universal form is made of material elements, and so that we can carry a conception to the Lord, he shows that universal form, which is made of material elements. How many persons would agree with that statement? How many persons would disagree with that statement? We've got a lot of abstainers. We've got to have, get it. How many people are just bewildered? So there's a little lack of clarity here, isn't there? Seems like we hit a good topic to talk about. Okay, back to the question. You wanted to modify that statement or disagree with it? Or universal form is?
Temporary.
Okay. Because?
What Arjuna saw was actually the functioning within the material world.
Okay. It's the functioning of the Lord within the material world, which is temporary, and so the form is temporary.
But the Purusha avatars are actually, they are actually the Supreme Lord incarnates for the functioning of
the material world. And are they temporary or eternal? Okay. Then, if they're eternal, are they present in the spiritual world? Yes. They're not as the super soul present in the spiritual world, but in another feature they're present in the spiritual world, because super soul is a plenary expansion, or the Purusha avatars are plenary expansions of Sankarshan in the spiritual world. So, Sankarshan in the spiritual world is eternal, yes? And his expansion is also eternal, but for a specific function only, that is material creation. So it's not present in the spiritual world as Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Chiradakshaya Vishnu, but present in the spiritual world as Lord Sankarshan, from whom he expands these Purusha avatars. And then another point is, please note that the periodic creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe is eternal. It's cyclical, and that cyclical activity is eternal. So it's not that once upon a time Sankarshan was hanging out in the spiritual world and he looked at his watch and said, I guess it's now time to, boop, there's Mahavishnu. And then he was existing. But eternal. So to describe as an expansion of Sankarshan, that's eternal. Like living entities. Living entities are expansions of the Lord's Tatastha Shakti. So are they eternal or not? They're eternal. Okay. So now we got another statement that says the universal form is temporary and it's a manifestation of the Lord's feature of the material creation. And that's what Arjuna saw. Whereas the Supersoul is eternal and oversees the affairs of the material creation. Anybody not like that idea? He wants to modify it a little bit. You want to modify it? Vishnu's form is transcendental.
The Purusha avatar.
Purusha avatars. Vishnu,
and,
yeah.
And the universal form is actually is temporary and...
It's temporary.
It's material.
Is it transcendental or is it not transcendental?
Material.
It's transcendental. It's a form of the Lord.
But it's material.
But it's temporary.
Yes, temporary.
But it's temporary. It's a form of the Lord, but temporary. Well, you know, to say transcendental, not transcendental, or material, very much depends upon the perspective, because in one sense, everything that comes from Krishna is spiritual, although the energies may act differently, and therefore we give names. But the universal form is a form which it's Krishna manifests, and then in the sense that it's temporary, he manifests and then doesn't manifest. Now the verse is saying that it's the universal form of the Purusha incarnation. Well, start over again. He's saying that the the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation, and he manifested all the ingredients for the material creation, and as a result there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. So this is the Lord's expanding himself as the universal form of the Purusha incarnation. So the Purusha forms of the Lord, it was said earlier, they are for the purpose of material creation. They're Lords in the sense that they're the same tattva as Krishna or Narayan or Sankarshan. They're of the same tattva, but they have a function. Their function is creation. And their mood is like Advaitacharya is to Lord Chaitanya's. Mood is a mood of service. They're Lords, but they do this as a service. They're Lords in that they expand the universal form, they expand the ingredients, but they do this as a service. I mean, the potency is within them to do so, but they do so in the mood of service. It's like even Balaram in the spiritual world. He's not different than Krishna, except for color. But his mood is to serve Krishna, although he's the Lord. And all other beings derive their inspiration or propensity for service from that service mood of Lord Balaram. But they're the Purusha avatars are direct forms of the Lord. In the first chapter of this sixth canto, the meditation, the universal form is described in the whole chapter. It's the subject of the first chapter. It's a different perspective on the universal form of the Lord than we find in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But it's the universal form of the Lord, and Shukadeva Goswami is instructing Maharaj Pariksit to meditate upon that. Later he indicates to abandon that worship and meditate upon Paramatma. So this is the first step, is to recognize something that you said wasn't exactly right. It helps the neophyte to fix their mind on the Lord, because the universal form is the manifestation of the Lord of this whole universe, which is temporary. And so the form is temporary. But it's a transcendental form distinct from saying, you know, a material form like we have a material form. Our form is definitely material, and it's definitely not transcendental. The universal form is a form of the Lord who is transcendental, and so that form is a transcendental form, but it's temporary. So it's a different kind of transcendental than the Swarup, Satchitananda Vigraha form of Krishna. Because it's a form of the Lord who is transcendental, but it's temporary. Now that everything is crystal clear, we'll go on. To our very attentive audience, knowing that I might ask you a quiz question tomorrow, so you better be very attentive. Text 43 through 45. Brahma gives a long list and says all of this long list may appear to be the specific truth and form of the Lord, but not so. There's only one form, there's only one absolute truth, and that absolute truth manifests various truths. Or you know, the cause manifests various effects, which downstream then become causes of other effects. But there's a cause of all causes. And there's only one. And this whole long list is not the cause of all causes, although there are causal personalities or causal factors or causal principles. It's a nice list. I myself, namely Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu is in the list. Great generators of living beings like Daksha and Prajapati, yourselves, that's his sons like Narada and the four Kumaras, heavenly demigods like Indra and Chandra, the leaders of the Bhurloka planet, the leaders of the earthly planets, the leaders of the lower planets, that covers everything in the material world, the leaders of the Gandharva planets, the leaders of the Vidyadhara planets, the leaders of the Charanaloka planets, the leaders of the Yakshas, Rakshas, and Urugas, the great sages, the great demons, the great atheists, and the great spacemen, as well as the dead bodies, evil spirits, Satan's jinn, Kushmandas, great aquatics, great beasts, great birds, etc. In other words, anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, mental or perceptual dexterity, strength, forgiveness, beauty, modesty, opulence and breeding, whether in form or formless, end of list, may appear to be the specific truth in the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. Purport. Those in the list given above, beginning from the name, Brahmaji, the first living creature within the universe, down to, and he goes over the same list again, may appear to be the Supreme Lord, but factually none of them is the Supreme Lord. Every one of them possesses only a fragment of the great potencies of the Supreme Lord. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 13, there are six topics. Two of those six topics are Jnanam and Gyanam, knowledge and the object of knowledge. So here, in this chapter, Purusha Sukta confirmed, Lord Brahma is saying, no one can know the Lord completely. And he's also saying, that which can know the Lord even not completely, themselves, while they may be powerful or great or causal principles of some kind, they're also, their very existence is a part, a fragmental part of the Supreme. They're not the Supreme. And so then once again, it's not possible for the part to know the Supreme, nor is the part the Supreme. Knowledge and the object of knowledge. The object of knowledge is the Supreme. And the understanding of things in relationship with Him is also knowledge. The object of knowledge. Then he gives examples. The less intelligent man is surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomena, as the aborigines are fearful of a great thunderbolt, a great and gigantic banyan tree, or a great lofty mountain in the jungle. For such undeveloped human beings, merely the slight display of the Lord's potency is captivating. Now, in Nectar Devotion, we know Prabhupada says, this is an example of how worship of the Supreme exists even in Aborigines. Because they don't know what is the Supreme, they worship something powerful. But there's the tendency for worship, just as the indication is there in Bhagavad Gita. There are divisions of faith, and one doesn't have faith that Krishna is God, will have faith in something. Because faith is intrinsic, worship is intrinsic, service is intrinsic, knowledge is intrinsic. So that'll manifest itself in some way according to the modes of nature. So at the lower stages is seeing something very wonderful in nature. This is chapter 1 of this canto, seeing that something wonderful in nature in relation to the Supreme. First step in God realization. A still more advanced person is captivated by the powers of the demigods and goddesses. That's also covered in the second chapter. The tendency for worship. So some worship this because they want that. Some worship that, this thing because they want that thing. Long list, pages of this worship gets you that result. And that's Vedic information. However, one is the supplier of all those distributors of things. So the intelligent person just worships the Supreme. So demigod worshippers, demigoddess worshippers, therefore those who are simply astonished by the powers of anything in the creation of the Lord without any factual information of the Lord himself are known as worshippers of the power. Shaktas. The modern scientist is also captivated by the wonderful actions and reactions of natural phenomena, and therefore he is also a Shakta of sorts. These lower grade persons gradually rise to become Sauryas, or worshippers of the sun god, or Ganapatyas. Prabhupada gives a very interesting explanation of worshippers of the form of Ganapati. He says it's worshippers of the mass of people as Janata Janardana or Daridra Narayana, etc., in the form of Ganapati. And then rise to the platform of worshipping Lord Shiva in search of the ever-existing soul. And then to the stage of worshipping Lord Vishnu, who's mentioned in this list, the super soul, etc., without any information of Govinda, Lord Krishna, who is the original Lord Vishnu. Now, Vaishnava means, or derived from, one who worships Vishnu. And we speak of Vishnu Tattva. So it's not wrong to worship Vishnu. But it's minus the understanding that Krishna is the source of Vishnu. It's not complete. At least one hits the right tattva by worshipping Lord Vishnu. And largely, large groups of people that think Vishnu or Narayana Supreme and the avatars are just forms manifest in this world of he who is in the spiritual world. And after all, Narayana has four arms and Krishna only has two, so Narayana must be supreme. Something like that. Then he goes back down. In other ways, some are worshippers of race, nationality, birds, beasts, evil spirits, satans, etc. The general worship of Shani Deva, the Lord of distressful condition, or Sitala Devi, the goddess of smallpox. In the Harihara Kshetra Mandir, along with this, the deity that's there, there's a little Sitala Devi. There they say it's for chickenpox or smallpox. People actually go and worship so their children won't get chickenpox. Is also common to the mass of people. And there are many foolish men who worship the mass of people, or the poor class of man. So, different persons, societies, and communities worship some of the potent manifestations of the Lord, wrongly accepting the powerful object as God. Just outside the Hyderabad temple, as you're walking down the entryway to go to the street, there's a poster there. I'm not going to repeat the name of the person, but the person has a nice Singhasan and Ananta Shesh, and then his picture sitting on the throne of Lord Ananta. And I was told he's a very popular guy in Andhra Pradesh. In fact, there's a lot of people that do the same thing. They sit on Lord Ananta's throne with Lord Ananta. So people can worship man. That person is dragging people to hell. And he's destined for hell, and the worshippers of such a person will follow him. So Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatriki, Vidhimbina, Aikuntiki, Harer, Bhaktir, Udpattaya, Vakalpate. Those who make some presentation of what is worship and what is God and what is supreme without reference to the authorized scriptures are simply making a big disturbance in society. But they're there because persons want to be cheated, so Krishna provides them with a cheater. Proof, they get something genuine, they're saying no. They get something that's cheating, they say yes. They want to be cheated, and that's why such people are there. But in this verse it is advised by Brahmaji that none of them is the Supreme Lord. They are only borrowed plumes from the original Almighty Lord Sri Krishna. So, this is Sambandh again. It leads to Abhideya again. How to act in relationship with the Supreme. So one of the things that we don't do is don't act in a worshipful manner towards that which is not supreme. We respect all living entities, but we worship the personality of Godhead. And we don't have a problem not worshiping those that are not the personality of Godhead because of our proper scriptural training and understanding. Now the concluding point that Prabhupada makes is when the Lord is described as formless, it's 2 points. In the Vedic literature, it is to be understood that all these forms mentioned above, the this, that, this, and that, within the experience of universal knowledge, are different exhibition of the Lord's transcendental potencies only, and none of them factually represent the transcendental form of the Lord. So he is formless means none of the above. He doesn't have a form like that. He has a transcendental form, but he doesn't have a form like that. So no form like that is how we should understand. The Lord, so then he goes the next step and says, but when the Lord actually descends on earth or anywhere within the universe, the less intelligent class of men also mistake him to be one of them. And thus they imagine the transcendence to be formless or impersonal. So, question, what does it mean to be this being an impersonalist or voidist? This is two of the senses of what it means. To impose, to deify that which is not God, or to bring God down to the material platform where we are. Either way you do it, we're equal to God. You just bump ourselves up or bring God down. Rather than recognizing, his position is distinct. Although he comes into this world, because, mind you, the next section is the incarnations of the Lord. So he's preparing the audience for hearing about the incarnations of the Lord and not making this impersonal mistake or material estimation of the Lord, who is not material. So there are these two different ideas of statements that say the Absolute is formless. There's others also, but the Absolute is formless means he doesn't have a material form. Nirguna doesn't have material qualities. He has fully spiritual qualities. And then, so his form is not like theirs, and when he comes in this world, their form is not like his, and his form is not like theirs. Both is the indication of formless. He has spirit, but the positive, say it positively, he has spiritual form. So both statements are correct. He is formless in the sense he doesn't have a material form, or the form of others are not like his form. But he has Satchitananda Vigraha, so Saguna and Nirguna. If understood properly, both refer to the Lord. He has no material form, and he has a form of all spiritual quality. Factually, the Lord is not formless, nor does he belong to any of the multi-forms experienced within the universal forms. Final statement. One should try to know the truth about the Lord by following the instruction of Brahmaji. The way to understand these things, we're using our faculty of discrimination because we have such a thing. But through the medium of intelligence, one can understand the limit of intelligence to understand these things. And therefore, the proper way of understanding is by hearing. One hearing, we're exercising our intelligence, our power of discrimination or discerning one thing from another thing, but it's not by that method that we're going to understand. That can give us some indication of where our direction should go, but as we turn our direction towards the Supreme Lord and away from some illusion, we realize our intellect cannot penetrate into that region. It's limited, same as what Brahma was saying before. The limited cannot know the unlimited. But, so don't try to know the limited with your limited faculties. It won't happen. But, to the degree that one surrenders and engages in desireless devotional service, one can realize, one can understand. And so there's only one more verse left in the chapter that's describing, now I'm going to tell about the incarnations of the Lord. So he has prepared Narada and us by his discussion with Narada how to hear about the incarnations of the Lord in a non-imaginative way or non-speculative way or in a way that we'll get the chance is there to get the most benefit that one can derive. It certainly makes sense, just like Prabhupada is referring in the previous verse to chapter 3 of Canto 1, before describing the incarnations in chapter 3, he's describing how the Lord makes the arrangements for material creation. And it's that Lord who's descending, so when he descends, it's not like an ordinary being taking their birth, walking amongst us, nor should we go the other direction and make the mistake of elevating ordinary, or let's say, especially empowered persons to the position of God. Those very special, powerful persons cannot manifest everything that be. They're not the ultimate source of everything that exists. Nor are we. We have some control. Very little. We control which shoe we put on which foot. You know, some very basic things we can control. And even sometimes we get that wrong. So the Lord is one of a kind. And that's repeatedly in variety of ways, some very, very interesting creative ways has been described previously. So that when we hear about the appearance of the Lord in this world, we're ready to think of that, hear that, to let those passages, those messages enter deeply into the heart in a submissive and respectful manner, rather than pulling out our yardsticks and measuring, hey, how can this happen, and so forth. Okay. See if we have some discussion. I've never heard this argument. Your colleagues.
They were giving this argument why we should
water the root but get your insecticide out.
Yeah. So no, that's like we were having some conversation a few years ago that why worshipping Vishnu alone is sufficient.
Got it.
And that's why watering the root analogy came
okay.
in. And then they said that yes, we accept that. Watering the root has to be done.
But
what if the leaves get infected? So you have to take special attention to the leaves. So that's why you have to go through different gods and then appease and do sacrifices for those different gods as well. So besides worshipping Vishnu, you should worship other gods as well. That was their argument.
Fascinating argument. Leave it to college students to come up with one like that.
It wasn't. It was my family members.
Family members.
My father and my uncle and so.
Okay. Leaves may get infected. Well, two things. Within any metaphor, there are points of similarity and dissimilarity. That's the nature of metaphor. That's the shortcoming of metaphor. But a metaphor is useful to the degree that there is points of consistency. In such a metaphor, ordinary leaves do get infected. In the case of Lord Vishnu, one recognizes the root of existence is Lord Vishnu, and one who waters the root of existence, the best way to take care of damaged leaves is to not have any more damaged leaves, not even have more material bodies. That's the permanent solution to damaged leaves in the metaphor. Or another way of saying, a different way of saying the same thing is, this is one of the points of dissimilarity in the metaphor that doesn't have an overlap. Whereas leaves of ordinary trees have the plant, the creeper of bhakti that grows by worshipping Lord Vishnu carries one beyond the material world. Not just produces leaves of a tree. So the purpose of the metaphor is to help us understand something that's of this plane, that's of that plane, so that we can understand something on this plane. Excuse me, the other way around. Something on this plane so we can understand something of that plane. Practically, another way of saying the same thing is that whatever ability some demigod or any agent has in this world, from where do they derive that ability? From the source of everything. So is it not that the message is if we apply our energy, attention, service on the source of everything, that subset is already included. The subset of anything. From the source of everything. It's already included. So one who feels, yes, it's important to have, you know, healthy leaves, worship the source of healthy leaves. Worship the source of everything and all desirable things. And so this is the answer that Lord Chaitanya gives about what is faith. Faith, you can look in the purport of 241 Bhagavad Gita. Faith is confidence, quoting Lord Chaitanya, in by doing one thing, other desirable things, or for that matter, all other desirable things, will be simultaneously fulfilled. So, this position of whoever it was, your relatives that were saying this, because they don't have faith in the Supreme, because they don't have a proper conception of what is the Supreme, they don't have faith in the Supreme, and therefore, this is not sufficient, we need some of that. Because this is not sufficient. But that means they haven't understood what the Supreme is. And that's specifically what Brahma is saying. He's the source of everything. Now that doesn't mean because he's the source of everything, we just hang around and do nothing because he's the source of everything. Brahma serves, Narada serves, these, you know, great personalities, they serve because There's the Supreme. But the Supreme is not dependent upon our service to manifest things. He can manifest things. He showed to Lord Brahma. Calves and cowherd boys, presto. Have them disappear, presto. Have the form, whatever, you know, whatever you'd like to see, effortlessly. Universal form, gotcha. Here it is. Effortlessly. He doesn't need anyone's anything. He's independent. But he gives us opportunity to serve. That's the position of the faithful. Very creative question. Very creative, faithless question. Something else? Yes. There's innocent people. They become caught up in worshiping some guy that's sitting and pretending that he's God. Yeah, this is similar to the question you asked this morning about what is voidism mean? It's the absence of Krishna. So the absence of desire to serve Krishna, that's material. That's the default mode. It's a one or it's a zero. That's what this material world is, a place of forgetfulness of Krishna. Interestingly enough, everything that exists in this world of forgetfulness of Krishna is a manifestation of Krishna. But those who want to forget Krishna do not see like that. Cannot see like that. And Krishna permits them to not see like that. And then they become very, 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 very busy trying to enjoy that which they're not entitled to enjoy. Something? You're just stretching. Okay. Okay? Anything else? Is it true that different sampradayas what? Yes, but it's a detail, not a principle. They do so because they have their tradition and also they have statements of scripture that indicate something. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami handles this in a very, very wonderful way in the Adi Leela. Some people say, and it's not that those statements are wrong, they're all right. They're scriptural statements, and they're right. It's, you know, like what's an elephant, or they're not wrong. But the big picture of the very much depends upon the authoritative statements of scripture that one accepts. So we accept the Srimad Bhagavatam because the Sattvic Puranas and even the other non-Sattvic Puranas abundantly describe the Srimad Bhagavatam as supreme, the monarch. the best amongst us, the Amala Purana and so forth. And so if there's any apparent discrepancy between one statement and another, or we take the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's not in fundamental opposition to the other sampradayas, the Vaishnava sampradayas. It's a detail.
So all the sampradayas are receiving the Supreme
Lord. All the sampradayas are receiving?
They're worshipping
the Supreme Lord, yes.
But because of these details, the differences in the detail, so we did not include the people in general who surrender to her. You know, like, let us say, I am a general public.
You're a witch? Some people say, I am a...
No. Like, for any ordinary person to come to know that
Yeah, an ordinary person gets confused about anything. And we can try to help such an ordinary person by understanding that it's a detail. There's this the 95% is in essence the same. And this other percentage is a detail of how they perceive and how they do their worship and differences in rituals and their bhava, the mood of that worship. But, you know, the primary thing is they're worshiping the Supreme. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as a young man, traveled with his father, because his father was the high court judge, he had access to the priests in the different temples that they visited. And he kept very careful record of those discussions and later published an encyclopedia of Vaishnava worship in India, which the persons who looked at the book, the scholars, said it would take a team of 35 men a whole lifetime just to gather this information, what to speak of, compile it, put it together and edit, and this young man has done it. Incredible. So he knew differences, and he, recorded them. But then the mature stage of his preaching, he... rather than emphasizing the differences, emphasized the samenesses. In the Chaitanya Mat, where it was his headquarters for his Gaudiya Mat, the temple of Gandharvaka Giridhari, on the four corners of the temple, he established little murtis of the four Sampradaya Acharyas, and it was a core part of his teaching. How they are similar. Although he's a Gaudiya Vaishnava, or in the Madhva Sampradaya, honoring equal each one, purposefully, to show the unity and harmony. While there's differences, they're Vaishnavas, of bona fide disciplic successions. Do you think that the Kumaras and the Goddess of Fortune and Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are going to have a big argument over... Some of the immature followers may do that. But, and what to speak of ordinary people. There are distinctions. And there are essences. like, you know, principles and details, that kind of thing. Something else? Yeah, Padma Purana. Specific. It mentions them by name. It gives the number, it mentions them by name. And then says, other than this, something else? Okay. See the Prabhupada Ki Jai.